All across America and around the world, this is Veterans Radio. This is Veterans Radio. And now, your host for today's program, Dale Thronberry.
And good afternoon and welcome to Veterans Radio. My name is Dale Thronberry. I used to be a helicopter pilot, chief warrant officer, second grade. That was me, 1969. I want to welcome you to Veterans Radio today. We're really excited to have you on our program. This is our monthly of VA benefits, what's going on at the VA and what's going on with your benefits. So we encourage you to give us a call on the program today. The number is locally is 734-822-1600. That's 734-822-1600. And then we've also got a toll-free number for you. That's 844-838-1600. That's 844-838-1600. A couple of things coming up that I wanted to mention. I think it was 2 weeks ago, I had a young woman on from an organization called Warriors and Caregivers United, and they've got a fundraiser that's coming up in two more weeks now. It's going to be the Saturday, July 7th. Too many S's there. Saturday, July 7th at 10 o'clock in the morning, there's going to be a walk and roll fundraiser for the Warriors and Caregivers United from the Ann Arbor VA, and they're going to be walking over to and rolling over to the U of M campus and then back again. And this is an idea. What they're trying to do is to raise awareness for the suicides that are occurring among the veteran community. We know that it's 20 a day, and that's just unacceptable. And so we encourage you, if you're in the local area, you can go to the Warriors and Caregivers United website. It's just wacu.org, and there's more information on there. And we're hoping to be out there on the 7th, and maybe we'll see you there, hopefully. The other fundraiser that's always, well, it's not a fundraiser, I'm sure it is, but it's always fun, is to go to Thunder Over Michigan, and that is coming up on August 25th and 26th of this year. And make sure you get out there, because the United States Air Force Thunderbirds are going to be the main attraction this year. And so you can go to their website. That's at theyankeeairmuseum.org/airshow. You can get your tickets. The earlier you buy your tickets, the cheaper they are. I shouldn't say cheaper. Lower cost, I guess. Or you get a good deal by buying your tickets now. So go to theyankeeairmuseum.org/airshow and check it out. There's all kinds of pictures. There's a great photo there on the screen as you look at the Thunderbirds. I can't imagine flying at, 600, 700, 800 miles an hour, you know, a foot away from another jet. So you got to go and see this. We've seen them before. We've seen the Blue Angels out there. These people are true professionals, and it really makes you appreciate the talent that these pilots have. And go do it. I think you're going to like it. That's August 25th and 26th out at the Yankee Air Museum in Willow Run, Michigan, at the old Willow Run Airport. I think you're going to find it really great. They got a cool museum out there, too, so there's lots of things that you can do. So check it out. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we've got two guest experts with us today to answer your questions about benefits and what's going on with the VA and some other things. So make sure you write down those numbers, 734-822-1600, 844-838-1600. We'll be back to answer your questions. Call us, you know, take a chance. We might be able to answer your question. If you've had problems getting your disability claim adjudicated in a timely fashion, maybe we can help you out with that too. So we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back after this. Thank you. We're back on Veterans Radio. If I had ever been able to play an instrument, I would have been playing the bass drum on that one. And I just got to go boom, boom. That's Sousa for those musical experts that are out there. All right, joining me in the studio right now is our local resident expert from the Washtenaw County Veterans Service Office, and that's Michael Smith. And Michael, welcome back to Veterans Radio.
Well, Dale, you know, it's always good to be in the studio with you, and I'm a big fan of the show, so I hope we have some veterans call us today so we can talk about their issues.
I hope so, too. And joining me on the phone, direct from headquarters of Legal Help for Veterans, I think you believe, is retired Brigadier General of the United States Air Force, Carol Ann Fasson. Carol Ann, welcome back to Veterans Radio.
Good afternoon, Dale and Mike, and I agree with you. I hope people call in so we could help them out with their questions and their claims.
Well, we're going to try that. We've got a couple of things that I wanted to bring up. Number one is I got an email, surprisingly. I get a couple every once in a while. But this one was from a gentleman in the Philippines. And where did I put his email? Oh, well. Come on. I know it's here. Anyway, he moved to the Philippines assuming, and that's the big word right there, at the bottom one. All right, there we go. Good thing I have Michael here to help me. But anyway, he moved to the Philippines assuming that he would be covered. And he says to me, he says, Mr. Throneberry, that's my father, good morning. I have recently moved to Cebu, Manila, the Philippines. One of the main reasons for relocating to the Philippines was the assumption that I would be eligible for medical care from the medical facility in Manila. Much to my chagrin, this is not true. Only service-connected medical claims are serviced from Manila. Other veterans with non-service-connected conditions have had to deal with the same misinformation. Would this be fair? I don't know. FYI, on a regular basis, it says he's entitled to medical care at any facility. Either one of you care to jump in on that one?
Well, Dale, we were having some discussions prior to the beginning of the show about what is provided at essentially would be considered a community-based outpatient clinic. In Manila, that is an outpatient clinic. It's not a full VA hospital. So some of the services provided at VA Ann Arbor Healthcare System are not provided at the Toledo CBOC, nor any of the other community-based outpatient clinics around the state. Those full services are provided by the hospitals. And I think that's one of the things that we have to look at when you think about Manila. One, it's an outpatient clinic. They also, if you look at their fact sheet for services, they do provide services to both service-connected and non-service-connected veterans. And both categories of veterans are in the same boat in terms of the limited services provided by that outpatient clinic, such as homeless veteran services. And yet there is this assumption by a lot of veterans that all veterans can get their health care at a VA facility, and that is regardless of where they live. And that assumption is just that. It's not a factually based assumption.
Caroline, are you aware of anything like that?
I'm going to agree with Michael 100%. The assumption that you could just walk in any place and get your service is not correct. So whether it's Manila, Illinois, Florida, you need to look at the facility. Now, what I would encourage this gentleman to do is maybe follow through. It's not saying that he's going to be able to receive the care if he gets a disability rating for a certain entity, because the CBOC is at a certain level, and as you go further and further out, I mean, look at the services or the different areas that are not provided in all locations. You might have to go to Cleveland or Chicago for our paralyzed veterans full service. So
right.
I would at least encourage him, if there are issues, to call in, say, a Legal Help for Veterans, or find a veteran service officer in Manila to help him with a claim if he's not service-connected.
Okay. I just thought it was an interesting question. I'm assuming, against making an assumption that, you know, he figures, well, I'm just covered wherever I go. And he didn't imply that he had a service-connected disability anyway. But for those of you that are out there listening, there is an option that is available to you, and it's called a foreign medical program. And this is something that I was able to research. It's if you are service-connected disabled and you go to pretty much any hospital in the world that you know, if you're in Thailand and you end up having to go to the hospital for your service-connected disability, you would be covered under a foreign, what's called a foreign medical program. And I thought this was really kind of interesting. It's not part of the regular medical benefits package, but it says that healthcare benefits for veterans and with VA-rated service-connected conditions, those are always the big ones right there, that if you're either residing or traveling abroad under the federal foreign medical program, the VA assumes payment responsibility for certain necessary healthcare services associated with the treatment of VA-adjudicated service-connected conditions, disabilities associated with and held to be aggravating a service connection. Yeah, you know what I mean. So you got to have a disability to get coverage.
Dale, as yes. You take a little breath, that's really true if you're service-connected. And I think those are the critical words, that if you are in need of care and you go to an emergency room, et cetera, you know, you have that service-connected. You're recognized by the VA for that entity. And so I think that's really important. Going back to our gentleman, I just thought of something else. You know, anybody, any veteran could walk in to a VA and see if they are eligible, and then you would need to pull out the eight levels of criteria for receiving health care. And I think that's real critical. But if they don't offer that service in the area, hopefully if you're service connected, as you just indicated, you could go to another facility and be recognized, even in a foreign land.
Well, obviously, you know, brilliant minds work together, because that was what my next question was. I wanted to talk about eligibility. You know, we're always encouraging people to go to the VA, at least sign up, get your card, and so forth. But there are certain eligibility requirements, aren't there?
That is correct. And I'll touch on the foreign medical program, because that ties back into eligibility for VA healthcare even here in the United States, whether it be at a VA medical center, a VA healthcare system, or a community-based outpatient clinic, or out in the community under the CHOICE program. The VA's primary mission is to take care of veterans who have service-connected disabilities. That is their mission. And also to provide a place for people to go to get healthcare services if they're indigent and have no other means to obtain health insurance or healthcare services. So that was the VA healthcare system's primary focus from its. From its onset. And what happened was, during the years that President Bush, G.W. Bush was in the presidency, they wanted to open up VA health care to other veterans. And those veterans could go get their health care services or health insurance somewhere else. But they were choosing to come into the VA because of how cheap the prescription copayments were, and the copayments for doctor's visits and things like that. So they begin to determine, how is someone going to be eligible for VA health care? Well, if you have service-connected disabilities, and then there's priority group 1, 2, and 3. So that covers 0 through 10, I think is in 3.
What does that mean, 0 through 10?
Meaning you're 0% service-connected to 10% service-connected. You're in priority group 3. If you're 20% to 40%, you're in priority group 2. If you're 50% or higher, you're in priority group 1. When we get into the other priority groups like 4, 5, and 6, those essentially are looking at those who are indigent, receiving the non-service connected disability pension, and therefore their income is obviously so low that they're unable to go get health care insurance or health services some other place. So when we opened up enrollment, or when the VA opened up enrollment back in 2003 or 2004, they created priority groups 7 and 8. These were the ones where income became the determinant about whether those people were going to be eligible for VA health care or not. If they were above the means, then they were not going to be provided VA health care. If they were below the means, meaning the figure that was established by income, then they would be eligible. The VA initially had it flat rates across the nation, but then realized income in Tupelo, Mississippi, mm-hmm. could go a whole lot further and was a whole lot less than income in Washtenaw County, Michigan. So they began to go to a geographic means in that in different locations, your eligibility could be better, mm-hmm. Like say, for instance, in Battle Creek, than if you were to apply at the VA Ann Arbor Healthcare System, where they have a very high income level. Applying here could get you in, whereas going somewhere else where the income levels are lower may not get you in.
Right.
So, yes. And then on December 27th of 2006, President Bush suspended enrollment in Priority Group 8 because they had an influx of over 1.4 million veterans coming into the VA healthcare system without the capacity to really take care of those people's healthcare needs and focus on their primary mission, which is service-connected veterans and mm-hmm. those who are receiving the non-service-connected disability pension. So I really believe this gentleman's question out, his experience in the Philippines is not unusual. It's not unfair. It's essentially what the VA is set up to do and them focusing on their primary mission of who they're supposed to be delivering health care mm-hmm. for.
Wow. It is complicated
yes.
for some people. But Carol Ann, I know we lost you for a second. You back?
I'm here.
Okay.
And you know what? Michael, that was outstanding explanation. Simple and... But obviously, he deals with this all the time, and navigating the VA is not easy. So here is my plug that if you are having issues, you're trying to get through the system, don't do it on your own. Contact a county counselor, a VSO. Call us at Legal mm-hmm. Help for Veterans. We've been doing it for a few years, and to be honest, if I don't know answers or how to deal with some of these issues, I call Michael. it's like he's in my toolbox, and you need to know the resources that are available.
Well, that was a nice paid political announcement there for the Washtenaw County.
That's right.
Services.
Department of Veterans Affairs. That's right.
But there are organizations all over the country for all those of you that are listening, where the people just want to help you, and it's such a bureaucracy, and it's in sometimes we get the idea that it's in complete disarray, although we know that's not entirely true. It just appears that way, especially with what the media has to say. So we want to make sure that you if you're entitled and you did that, you were in the service, so you're entitled. If you have something that occurred to you while you were in service, that you should be going into your VA to find out if you're covered or not. Why not? Go ahead.
This is Carol Ann. I want to talk about a little peg of what you just said. And I've been noticing we just had several veterans come to us that we were able to get them a disability rating, service-connected, let's say 30% or greater. And a couple of them have been very angry. They have been in the VA system. One was in 18 years, one was in 14 years, another 9 years. And until they, say, went to a veterans fair or talked to a friend who dealt with, say, a VSO, a county counselor, maybe Legal Help for Veterans, they were not aware of applying for a disability rating and getting that benefit. And where I'm going is they are so angry that they believe since they were receiving care from the VA, an employee, somebody should have said something. There is a difference of applying for a disability rating and receiving your health care. And I said to them, I'm sorry if it's your responsibility to either listen. If somebody said, hey, you should apply, you need to go and do that. No, none of the VA employees are going to tell you how to do that or do it for you. So I've just been noticing that lately, and men and women are angry because they believe they should have been service-connected for many years. There's nothing that they could do about it until you put in a claim.
You actually touched on a huge disconnect. I think you were around when the VA had their one VA program where they were like, we're three separate VAs, but we actually function as one. And they had all these boards and they had all these meetings between the VA healthcare side of the house, the National Cemetery Administration, and the Veterans Benefits Administration. And it's not unlike what we see going on right now with the MyVA, which is now transformed into Community Veterans Engagement Boards, or CVEBs, where the VA is recognizing that they have a disconnect amongst themselves. Mm-hmm. And Carol Ann is very, very spot on right here, because we have just recently, in the last, I'd say, 8 months, had three veterans, two with prostate cancer and one with Parkinson's disease, who have been treated. They were diagnosed at the VA hospital. They were receiving treatment at the VA hospital. The two guys with the prostate cancer was over a year. The young man with the Parkinson's disease was 9 months of being treated at the mm-hmm. VA and our healthcare system, and never was told you should go file a claim for service-connected disability compensation. Now, all three of them now are currently service-connected due to the efforts mm-hmm. of my staff at Washtenaw County Department of Veterans Affairs. But we reached out to the social workers, and I set up a training, and actually we're going to begin doing this quarterly. We used to do it at one time twice a year, and those are the folks that really do deal with, hey, where should you go, and what should you do now that you have this going on? So I did a training with about 30 of the social workers over at the VA Ann Arbor Healthcare System, and we're scheduled to continue to go over there and mm-hmm. Continue to brief them on who we are, what we do, and we passed out information about what county departments of Veterans Affairs do here in Michigan, and I gave them the contact information for all the counties in their catchment area, with the exclusion of the two northern counties in Ohio. Because we wanted to make sure that these folks know, again, that we exist, not make assumptions about what we do, but more importantly, make the referrals to our offices so that we can take care of the disability compensation side of the house.
Well, I think that's really what's important, is that the VA has to make these patients aware that, I mean, I know I went up there for a test at one point, and I got my service-connected disability as a result of talking to you guys. They didn't recommend I go and talk to you guys. They certainly, they're not going to, it's kind of like a conflict of interest,
right.
So you try to do that. I wanted to ask you real quickly. Well, I think I have to keep this till, I got 4 minutes now. There are a couple of things that have been going on at the VA that we can talk about. When we come back after the break, I want to find out what it is that you have to go through to become a VSO. All right?
Okay, sure.
So think about it. I think that's important. I don't think people realize, oh, it's just some guy sitting and, drinking coffee and say, oh, sure, I'll take care of that for you. Not a problem. But the VA has installed a third crisis line center in Topeka, Kansas, which is kind of interesting, I thought. It said that the VA, since it's launched its Veterans Crisis Line, has received over 3.5 million calls. They have emergency services that they can, they've reacted to their callers in immediate or imminent crisis over 93,000 times. They've engaged 400,000 people. I think that's great that they're doing that. It's so difficult to understand. They're trying to do all these things, but they don't have a head yet. And that, that leads to confusion and chaos, I think, because you've got the guy, let's say, whoever it is at this VA hospital says, well, I'm not getting anything down from above. Let's continue, off our services this way. And then you got this guy over here doing it this way. And I think I'm hoping that will change with when the nominee, they just did nominate somebody, and I had it written down again, but I forget what his name
was. Mr. Wilkie.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah, the guy from what department was he from? Defense or?
Well, that's correct. He also holds a current position in the Department of Defense.
Okay.
Yes.
That's right. Yeah, because there's that issue that you can't be, with two people. But anyway, so that's one piece of news that I think is really important. And they're trying. I mean, this is pretty much the largest bureaucracy in the United States governmental system. And it certainly is the largest healthcare system. And even though they need to be broken into their three parts, everybody assumes that everything is all together. Okay, so the other thing I had. Carol Ann, you'll like this one, and you probably got it already anyway. The Board of Veterans resolved a record number of claims for fiscal year 2018 so far. Right?
Right.
That was because of the implementation, the RAMP, the Rapid Appeals Management
right.
Program, where people were able to opt out of that traditional route and get their claims done within about 100 and, or get their appeals settled within about 120 days. And we've had some success with use of RAMP with some of our own appellants who have been waiting around for some time. So I think that's where their success is coming from.
Okay.
Well, I'm concerned, Michael, and I don't know if you're seeing this, and Dale, if you have to go to a commercial.
I'll let you know.
So they've taken action, but some of the ramps have been denied, and now they're going to go through another channel of appeals. So, yes, you did get an answer, you know, as we well know, a lot of our veterans. But then they're now in another holding pattern, and I believe that appeal process is at least 2 years.
Okay. Well, we have too many Christmas. You know, every time I try to speed something up, somebody else gets in there and throws another roadblock up. We're going to be coming back after the news. I think we've got a little bit less than a minute to go, right? Okay. So I'm looking over at my expert over there. Well, there comes our band. All right, so give us a call. You have a question, we've got two experts here that can help you out. The number is 734-822-1600 or 844-838-1600. We want to help you. Give us a call. We'll be doing that. We'll be back after the news. Back on Veterans Radio, we got to work on those Medal of Honors. I'm not sure what's happening with my technology. I have evidently it's not working, not mixing well with the existing technology here. But we are back on Veterans Radio, and we're talking with our two experts on veterans disability. We've got Michael Smith here from the local county Department of Veterans Affairs, and we've got retired General Carol Ann Fassone from Legal Help for Veterans, and we're here to help you out. So we want you to give us a call here at Veterans Radio, 734-822-1600 or 844-838-1600. All right, as I mentioned before we went to the break, I wanted to ask Michael, what kind of training did you or does a VSO have to go through before they are, quote, certified to help out a veteran?
Well, there's actually several ways that you can become a service officer. Either you can work for one of the congressionally chartered national veteran service organizations like the Veterans of Foreign Wars, the Disabled American Veterans, the American Legion, the Military Order of Purple Heart, or any of those congressionally chartered national veteran service organizations. Or you can be an employee of a state veteran service organization and be a state veteran service officer, or you can work for a county government as a county veteran service officer. Well, all of us who become service officers, whether we're county, state, or national, we have to attend a course of training that's been approved by the VA Office of General Counsel. So for us, we go to the National Association of County Veteran Service Officers that conducts accreditation training. That accreditation training, again, has been approved by the VA Office of General Counsel. At the end of that approved prescribed course of instruction, they have to be administered. We have to be administered a test. Mm-hmm. Once we test and pass, then that service organization can recommend us to the VA Office of General Counsel for accreditation, which is what we do through the National Association of County Veteran Service Officers. The state of Michigan is recognized through the Michigan Veterans Affairs Agency as a state veteran service organization, and they have five state veteran service officers. They went through a prescribed course of training, testing, and then the same with the VFW, the DAV, and all the other congressionally chartered national veteran service organizations. Now, once we've obtained accreditation or recognition from the VA Office of General Counsel to be able to prepare, present, and prosecute claims on the behalf of beneficiaries to the Department of Veterans Affairs, we have to obtain 16 continuing education units per year to maintain our accreditation or test regularly and then be recertified every 5 years with the VA Office of General Counsel. So my office staff and I, we just attended our spring conference and we had 18 hours of instruction. And then about 3 weeks after that, we went out to our National Association of County Veteran Service Officers, CEU training, which was 32 hours. So okay. we get above what the VA requires. We just believe that it's that important, and believe it or not, in between our spring training in Traverse City and the training we just had out in Reno, there was a court decision that was rendered, and it came out of the Federal Circuit Court of Appeals, and it deals with the issue of pain, where the Federal Circuit said, hey, listen, before we had pretty much said that pain cannot be a disability in and of itself. It had to be tied to a diagnosed condition. And this court decision basically says, hey, you know what? We can grant service connection and just based on pain. And then there's certain other prescriptions in the regulation and the law and prior court decisions that had almost said the same thing, but this one court decision kind of pulled it all together. And so the nature of the business changes, as you can see, within 3 weeks' time. A court decision was so important that it was on our training out in Reno, and now we all are waiting for the VA to determine rules that are going to be consistent with that court decision. So it does take a lot of training. There are those who take this job and have the passion for it, and they take this job and their training and their accreditation, and they use it to the benefit of their veterans, survivors, and dependents who come and see them. And then there are those who just, they don't. And that's just really the nature of the business. It's not like, unlike any other career, you got great doctors and you got good doctors, and then you got some doctors you never really, you wonder and you scratch your head how they get a license, or a nurse or a pharmacist or a mechanic. So, for the majority of the folks that I work with and throughout the state of Michigan, we've got a group of about 135 county veteran service officers around the state of Michigan in 72 counties, taking care of 76 counties, because some counties have teaming agreements with, like Houghton takes care of Keweenaw, Grand Traverse County takes care of Benzie and Leelanau, and Ingham County takes care of Clinton under teaming agreements. So that's why I say we have 72 offices that are either full or part-time, 135 county veteran service officers, again, taking care of 76 counties. Awesome group of people, great men and women who are passionate about this work, very quick learns. We have some of our newbies that share information on our MACVC Google group, which is the Michigan Association of County Veteran Counselors. Somebody may ask a question, and it may be a person who's been in service for 10 years. And here's one of our new persons who's been on a job for about a year up in Sheboygan County or over in Wexford, and they'll have the answer. And it's very impressive to see people coming into the business, taking it very seriously, obviously studying, where they can advise the old heads like me.
we don't know everything. We just
don't.
Think we do.
You know, and I tell those folks every time that they ask a question, we all learn. Even those of us who provide the answer, we're learning at the same time that we're providing the answer to those other folks. Because this is a very fast moving train, isn't that right, Carol Ann?
Oh, absolutely, Michael. I mean, you can't know all the issues, and you know.
No.
Every veteran's story is unique, and you need to treat it that way. I know so many veterans will come in and say, okay, my buddy that was next to me in the bunker got this. Why am I not getting that? We were in the same location. I have the same issues. No, it's not the same story. And so you really do have to search. And I would tell a veteran, if they get a denial, don't give up. Go back, search. Maybe you have to go down the road a bit to find somebody else. But there might be somebody that has, as you said, you know, just that, maybe that little extra inkling to keep digging. But please don't give up, veterans.
No, you can't. And it's because of people like the two of you that you know, keep many of these claims alive, because otherwise many veterans would just get frustrated and walk away. And as you point, you mentioned on, during the break that you had somebody who finally got a retroactive 9 years worth of benefits. And that's a tidy sum for some of you out there, even though it was only a 10%. That adds up, and that's X amount of dollars tax-free that he was entitled to for, you know, whatever his treatment was. There are a couple of things that I wanted to get into. And I guess continuing with the idea of the training for this is, and I know Carol Ann up at Legal Help, you have, you know, a lot of very dedicated workers, much like Michael has in his office too. And you've got lawyers available that keep up with all of these different legal challenges that seem to be out there, right?
Yes. I, as the nurse, there's the organization called NOVA, and there's webinars out there all the time. I know we're always searching for any in-services. You know, as a nurse in the hospital, you're always attending in-services and putting them on, and a lot of the times, as Michael indicated, training the social workers, you are delivering those research, those in-services. Mm-hmm. But now we listen for webinars. There was one the other day that was provided on sleep apnea. You talk about, you know, a disability that could go far and wide, and how to attack that issue. And so you have to be vigilant to look for the resources. You know, they're out there, but you need dedicated people. I agree with Michael. There are some people that, you know, come to work, and then there's others that will dig and give 150% to try to help a veteran, and that's what, you know, we'd like to be associated with, I think all of us.
Absolutely, yes.
Well, I agree. This is why we do this for you, to let you people out there know about what you're entitled to, what you're eligible for. You know, you've got to reach out. You've got to make an initial call at some point. You know, you can sit there, you know, as Carol Ann pointed out, that the guy says, how come he got the benefits and I didn't get the benefits? Well, did you talk to a VSO? Did you tell somebody your story? And can we get this, you know, this claim started for you? Because, you know, most people, I think, feel that they could just go to your office and just say, I've got this. And you go, well, let's prove that you have this. And when do you, you know, when did you first start showing the signs of it? When did you, you know, do you have your medical records that says that you were wounded or that you fell off a roof, you know, running away from the bad guys and, you know, never reported it to somebody? How are we going to do these things? And I think that that's really important, that we want to encourage you, you know, men and women that are out there, you know, make a call. You never know. I mean, they could say, no, this doesn't look like it'll work out. And you just go, okay, thank you very much. Next guy, call them up and says, oh, no. I just heard about somebody just had that same thing. You know, let's see if we can research that and find out what's going on with it. So I think that, you know, again, encouraging people to reach out. I mean, there are so many dedicated men and women out there that just want to help you. And if you let them help, you know, it's not going to eliminate the pain. It's not going to eliminate, you know, whatever the issue may be, but it might be able to compensate you a little bit for your loss. So I would suggest checking it out. I did have something else that I wanted to mention. I have a good friend who has Parkinson's, unfortunately, and you've taken care of him and so forth. But I just learned about this aid and attendance eligibility. And Carol Ann, I'll start off with you if you want to, or if Michael can talk about who is eligible for this aid in attendance, because my friend has been in a nursing home now for almost a year, and he hasn't had to pay a penny.
Well, there's a couple issues with that.
Okay. So I don't want to blow it up for him.
I would say Michael was giving some of the ratings before with the levels, the categories.
Mm-hmm.
One benefit that a lot of people don't even know of, and I think it's a huge benefit, if you're 70 to 100% service-connected with a disability, the VA, several years ago, I still was in the system, I want to say 07, 05 or 07, Michael, it was March, I believe of 07, the VA granted, I would say, another benefit, that if you're 70 to 100% service-connected, if you need long-term care, that will be covered by the VA. You have to apply, but that will be covered. So that's one way. The second way is, and now this is one of those benefits that is income-related. So, and this is a benefit that a spouse, non-veteran, could also get. They both could get at the same time, but it's all income-based. And so extensive paperwork needs to be filled out. If you would like, Dale, I could send you, I call it my recipe for aid in attendance. It's a three-pager, what they need to go through, what makes them eligible. But keep in mind, this is one of those served our country and with an honorable discharge and then income based.
Okay, and this man and his family have been helped out greatly by a social worker at the Ann Arbor VA who's really helped. Actually, I guess she instigated the whole thing to get this coverage for them. So there's at least one example of somebody up there that will point you in the right direction.
So I try to shy away from the phrase aid in attendance, because what I think, as Carol Ann pointed out, people don't realize that there's two types of benefits. Mm-hmm. And there's two types of what we call special monthly compensation and special monthly pension. So let's start on the compensation side of the house. If you are considered by the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs as being in need of aid and attendance because of your service-connected disabilities, they pay you special monthly compensation under several letters. So okay. The compensable rates from 10% to 100% in the law, 38 U.S.C. 1114, are covered under paragraphs A, B, C, D, E, F, G,
okay.
H, I, J. Now, it's very important. They're covered. Yeah. So 10% to 100% is covered under subparagraphs A through J. When we start talking about special monthly compensation, they're covered under subparagraphs K, L, M, N, N, O, P, Q is rescinded.
This is why, folks, you have to have somebody who knows what they're doing.
R, S, and T. So R1 and R2 are your highest levels of special monthly compensation for a person who's in need of aid and attendance. And that's somewhere near $8,000 a month. So, as most people know, regular rate of
nursing home,
that is correct. So not only does the VA pay the veteran that additional special monthly compensation, but on the healthcare side of the house, they are required to provide, under contract, nursing home care and long-term care for that person as well. And as Carol Ann pointed out, any service-connected disability, regardless of its rating, that requires you to be in skilled nursing care, the VA will pay for it under contract because, again, they don't have long-term nursing facilities in our VA healthcare systems. Now, as she then pointed out, there's another special monthly compensation code for a person who's housebound. That's an O or an S mm-hmm. or an L. Then there's other classifications that people most times associate with this non-service-connected disability pension that the VA pays to veterans and their survivors. As Carol Ann pointed out, these are income-based entitlements. And the Congress establishes each year what's called a maximum annual pension rate. And they pay that pension to survivors and veterans in under three categories. There's just a veteran or a survivor who needs a pension because of a lack of income from other sources. Then there's a veteran or a survivor who's considered housebound. That's special monthly pension, just like mm-hmm. special monthly compensation on the comp side. And then the last category for special monthly pension is a veteran or a survivor who's in need of aid and attendance. It's that category that's the most important to the pension because, as Carol Ann pointed out, it's an income and asset-based entitlement. So that if that veteran or survivor is annual income exceeds the maximum annual pension rate, it's not going to be available to them. Except the VA will consider their medical expenses that they pay out of the pocket that are recurring and unreimbursed, mostly those associated with insurance premiums and health insurance premiums, and their purchase in the marketplace for their need for aid and attendance, whether it's from an in-home care provider, an assisted living facility, or a nursing home facility. That cost can now be considered by the VA to reduce that person's countable income. I've got a veteran right now who was recognized by the VA under the non-service connected disability pension as being in need of aid and attendance, but he was buying or paying for the services of an in-home care provider. So of the potential $21,000 a year pension, he's only getting $611 a month, about $10,000, mm-hmm. about half of that. Well, his sister just had to move him into an assisted living facility. That's going to cost him $3,100 a month. That essentially is going to reduce his income to zero
right.
for the pension purposes. And now he's going to go from $611 a month to the full, I don't know, I think it's $1,800 a month. Because that, again, is reduced dollar, that benefit, because it's income based. That one category, though, will get you qualified before any of the other two categories because the VA will accept those other expenses. So we've got aid and attendance that's associated with compensation, and we've got aid and attendance that's associated with pension. Mm-hmm. And it all depends on where we are. I've had some of these folks who said, oh, this person's in need of aid and attendance, and they're these scam organizations that want to get a hold of that person's money and right. came in and said, well, we're going to apply for the pension for this person. And I looked him up in VBMS and he's getting compensation special monthly compensation for aid and attendance. And this organization was thinking they were going to apply for the pension for him to get his aid and attendance money. Well, the VA is not going to pay this guy a pension because he's getting that special monthly compensation, which mm-hmm. is, again, almost his was about $5,000 a month. So the pension is only $1,800 a month. So the VA is always going to pay the highest benefit. It was these people's ignorance of the two differences, meaning mm-hmm. there's aid and attendance on the comp side and aid and attendance on the pension side, that got them outed because they brought him into our office. And we told him to quickly change his bank account because he had to sign his bank account to this organization so that they could receive his benefit under the premise of getting help from them to file his claim for pension. And we had him make sure he changed his bank account and changed his VA benefit to go to that account and stay away from those kind of organizations.
Now, does this apply to any veteran that ends up in that particular situation that, you know, if you don't, you end up bust, you know, you're broke. And you're living basically on your Social Security check, that the VA might possibly help them out, or do they have to be service connected?
That's correct. So for special monthly compensation, and special monthly compensation for a person who's in need of aid and attendance, that is based on service connected disabilities, and for the VA to provide that person's or pay for that person's need for skilled nursing care, it has to be due to a service-connected condition.
Okay. I just wanted to clarify that. I didn't want you getting inundated with phone calls from all the people out there going, I need to go to a nursing home and I'm a veteran, so help me out. Well, we can't do that, right?
Well, they may qualify for the non-service-connected disability pension.
Correct.
Okay. All right. Go. Yeah, we have about 4 minutes, so... I think we might need to clarify that a little bit. Caroline, you want to jump in?
Well, what I could say is, please, there are so many issues to navigate the system. So on Thursday, Michael, you just said a scam. I had a young lady call me who is shopping around, and there was a company out there who she said would cost her $900 to apply for aid and attendance for her dad. Mm-hmm. And I said, stop right there. I said, it's against the law for anybody to charge anything. She says, well, what do you charge? I said, nothing. I said, it's against the law. So she then said, okay, I want to go with you. And I recommended... to her to make sure that the information, she said, well, my dad's already certified. I said, how did he get certified? She said, by this company. And I said, no, until the VA approves everything and the paperwork is accepted, your dad really isn't certified, but, you know, they told her it would cost $900. So it goes back to what you were saying earlier, Michael. Call somebody, get a credible agent to assist you, ask questions, and, you know, we're out there to help you. But it really gets me upset when I hear that somebody's been scammed.
Same here. And Dale, just to go back to your example of, okay, I'm down on my luck, I'm busted, all I have is my Social Security, and I need to go into a nursing home. That person may meet the eligibility criteria for the non-service connected disability pension for a person who's in need of aid and attendance. As long as that person's doctor says, yep, he or she needs to be in a protected environment, and someone has to provide them with 2 of 5 activities of daily living because of their medical need for aid and attendance, mm-hmm. and then yes, we could potentially get that non-service connected disability pension for that person.
I think that's really interesting.
Yep.
I mean, I'm not to that point yet, but I always want to have a backup plan. Well, I think that is interesting, and I encourage our listeners out there to, you know, contact either Michael or contact Carol Ann, and you know, especially if you're in our local area, and I know that you have good VSOs out wherever you are out in the country, and actually you could help us out because we're trying to assemble a list of recommended VSOs that we can refer our listeners to throughout the country. So if you just want to drop an email or a Facebook post or anything along those lines to us here at Veterans Radio, then we can get started with our list of qualified, certified, and all-around good VSOs that are around the country, because we know that there are people out there that need this help, and we want to, you know, be kind of this conduit that can help them out. So I think we're running up on about 2 minutes. Are there any other issues that either one of you wanted to bring up real quickly?
Well, the one thing I want to say, just, and I will conclude this, aid and attendance. If you have a question, audience, please go to Legal Help for Veteran. We have 18, podcasts out there, e-benefit books, different issues across the board, a lot that Michael and I and Dale, we've addressed. They're free. Go and take a look. And it might help answer some of your questions. And it's been great to be with both of you again tonight.
Okay. Michael?
Well, you know, Dale, our department has been trying to get out in the community a lot more. We're going to be down in Milan at the Senior Center. They're going to have a health fair coming up here in the fall. We were out in Manchester at their Senior Center. We're going to begin to go out on a regular basis beginning in the fall because they're on the school system, mm-hmm. Where we're going to go out to Manchester and try to set up shop and meet with those folks. Similarly, continue to collaborate with the University of Michigan, Phil Larson. He's the certifying mm-hmm. official over there, and Mike Wise over at Eastern, and Jen over at WCC, and the good folks over at Concordia actually had me come and do my first student veteran in brief last fall, which is something I do regularly with EMU, mm-hmm. and try to do more outreach efforts to go get the word out about who we are and what we do and make connections with veterans and their survivors and dependents where they are and help them get connected to a benefit.
All right. That's what we want to do.
Absolutely.
That's our job here, too, at Veterans Radio. So we encourage you to go to our website. We've got all their information on there for both of these people. And we're hoping that you can help us out. We've got a couple of programs that are going to be coming up in the next couple of weeks. Next week, actually, we've got a psychiatrist on the program who has been treating veterans for over 25 years. And so we encourage you to listen in on that program. She's going to be talking about her reaction to treating post-traumatic stress over the 25 years. And it's a really a fascinating story. So I encourage you to tune in for that. Feel free to contact Veterans Radio with any of your questions. We'll pass them along to Michael and Carol Ann. Both of you, thank you very much for being on the program today.
Thank you, Dale.
And until next week, you are dismissed.